take this opportunity to thank the people of New Hampshire for a great victory tonight. Let me thank the thousands of volunteers in New Hampshire. Thank you. Who knocked on doors in the rain and the snow and the cold. The reason that we won tonight in New Hampshire, we won last week in Iowa, it's because of the hard work of so many volunteers. And let me say tonight that this victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump. Victories behind us, popular vote in Iowa, and the victory here tonight. We're going to Nevada, we're going to South Carolina, we're going to win those states as well. And tonight I want to take the opportunity to express my appreciation and respect for all of the Democratic candidates we ran against. Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden. And what I can tell you with absolute certainty, and I know I speak for every one of the Democratic candidates, is that no matter who wins, and we certainly hope it's going to be us, we are going to unite together. We are going to unite together and defeat the most dangerous president in the modern history of this country. And the reason I believe we are going to win is that we have an unprecedented grassroots movement from coast to coast of millions of people. The reason that we are going to win is that we are putting together an unprecedented, multi-generational, multi-racial political movement. And this is a movement from coast to coast, which is demanding that we finally have an economy and a government that works for all of us, not wealthy campaign contributors. And I want to thank all of those people who have worked and contributed to our campaign, but make the point that in this point in the campaign, we are taking on billionaires, and we're taking on candidates funded by billionaires. But we are going to win because we have the agenda that speaks to the needs of working people throughout this country. Healthcare is a human right, not a privilege. The wealthy and powerful will start paying their fair share of taxes. We will make public colleges and universities tuition-free, and cancel all student debt. Unlike Donald Trump, we know that climate change is very real and an existential crisis for our planet. We are prepared to tell the fossil fuel industry that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of our planet. We are going to end a racist and broken criminal justice system. We are going to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Our gun safety policies will be determined by the American people, not the NRA. And under our administration, it will be women, not the government, who control their own lives. Now, our campaign is not just about beating Trump. It is about transforming this country. It is about having the courage to take on Wall Street, the insurance companies, the drug companies, the fossil fuel industry, the military-industrial complex. So tonight, I want to thank the people of New Hampshire for this great victory, thank our volunteers, and urge all Americans to join our effort to transform this country at BernieSanders.com. So it's on to Nevada, it's on to South Carolina, it's on to win the Democratic nomination, and together. And together, I have no doubt that we will defeat Donald Trump. Thank you all very much.
A jubilant Bernie Sanders, basically embracing his victory last night in New Hampshire. And as you can tell, with a very enthusiastic crowd, looking forward to more victories. And let's wish him luck in that venture. But of course, luck is not what gets you victories. It's hard work. So they snagged their first really significant victory, and we congratulate Bernie Sanders and his campaign. And I liked the style of his acceptance speech, if you will, in which he acknowledged people who historically would have not been on his list of thanks. He acknowledged fellow Democrats that he ran against. He acknowledged other people who were not attached to his campaign. But it was a great moment, and we celebrate it with Bernie Sanders and wish him the best in his future endeavors in this campaign. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. We opened up with Wayne Shorter, a tenor sax, on tenor sax, with Footprints, Herbie Hancock was on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Joe Chambers on drums. This was from his 2009 album, Adam's Apple. And now we get to the focus of our program today, which is going to be the last in the series that we've been doing, reviewing President Donald Trump's impeachment trial. And in this last session, we will be focusing on what I'm calling the aftermath. Of course, the aftermath continues. But we're ending the series with the impeachment trial of President Trump and its immediate effect, the whole trial, the lead up to the trial itself, and what now happens after the trial, and how it has affected U.S. politics and society as a whole. So we're going to take a look at the ways, some of the ways, from your vantage point, of how Trump's approach to governing is being made to reflect his personal philosophy and agenda. Now, remember that we are attempting analysis, not just your opinion. Opinions you can readily access because you know what you're thinking. But analysis requires you now to up the ante a little bit and bring thoughtful perspective on what you know and what you have observed so that we can appreciate, those of us listening to you, we can appreciate from your perspective what this trial produced, what it meant, and what it will continue to mean in the near future. What should we be prepared for based on what we went through, based on what we observed, based on what we collectively culled from Trump's behavior, the Democrats as well, everybody's behavior? In what ways do we see that the trial, one of the things and the key things that it did, was bring to our attention Trump's approach to governing and that approach reflecting his personal philosophy and agenda? So we're looking for a little bit more analysis than just your opinion today. You are going to put us more future positioning. You're going to be telling us what we might watch out for based on what you have observed, based on what your analysis is. All right? You know the number, 888-874-4888. And let's get started. We want to hear what your analysis is. 888-874-4888. Well, we can consider being so close to the end of the trial. We can consider this a period in which we would expect to learn from Donald Trump himself and his administration, such as it is, where they're going, where they intend to go, and consequently, where they intend to take us with them, whether we want to go or not. There will be policies, there will be new rules, there will be all kinds of new things coming down the pike. We've seen many already, and many more to come. And we can take these things as hints, big hints, as to whatever change Trump and his administration would have in mind for this nation. What do you think that might be? And where did you get your cues from? How are you relating to what has emerged so far, both from the trial and from the president and his administration themselves? It's a little bit more analytical, but it's not that difficult, because it's also, in large measure, not a surprise. Many of the things that are unfolding now and will unfold in the near future have been framed years ago, and we have seen indications that this is where Trump is likely to continue to go. So again, I'm going to encourage you to be a bit more analytical today as we close out this series titled The Aftermath. 888-874-4888. Ma'at, we start with you from Manhattan.
Yes, good afternoon to the beloved family. First of all, I seem to be with Gwen, and we seem to be singular in that that she was mocking this idea that the impeachment proceedings were somehow boring. I heard that as a right-wing talking point. Hardly boring. I mean, I was literally riveted. Of course, there was this strategy where I guess the idea was to limit the impeachment articles in that they figured that, well, maybe we can get these Republicans to focus on national security issues. And, of course, the Republicans always doing their own thing around Trump. And I think that where the president wind up, first of all, it basically gives him a blank check where he feels...
Wait. I have to interrupt. I want to bring you directly to what we're focusing on. We're not recapping the trial. We're looking for clues.
Yeah, well, I was about
were given
to take
at
you
the trial to, as to where Trump
we,
is going,
where we are now,
and we're seeing some things happening now. So we're looking for you to analyze
what
the
I
link
was...
between that and what is happening or what has begun to happen now.
Where I was taking it to, I did want to respond to being in a disagreement with many other callers, but in terms of now, I think that basically Trump feels that he can get away with just about anything and be protected and be covered by the GOP. I think that his so-called State of the Union it told us a lot about where he's coming from, because it was really a campaign rally style with the GOP licking his boots. And that's why I love so much what Pelosi did at the end, because if you could see the face of Melania, which, I mean, he was facing front, but he knew Trump was like a deer in the headlights. And another thing you know about it is it put him, the New York Post the following day allowed him
but
to.
You're still giving us a critique
but let me just
of what we already
last.
Witnessed. I want you
yeah, but
to analyze.
I haven't made this point in that the big lie of Trump. Because when he tore up a big sheet saying impeachment, that was a lie, because he will forever be impeached. So I think Pelosi was brilliant and made her point. Now, the vindictiveness, if that's what you're getting at, in other words, not 2 days or so later, he's firing Vindman, who did what
okay.
The law required him to do.
I'll give you some time to refocus, because we're getting a rehash of what we all, you know, we witnessed and what we know. We're not getting an analysis from you as to how the future of Trump's policies has already been shaped, and ways in which it is being expressed already. So you can come back, you know, just gather your thoughts together, but we're not looking for a rehash of what has already happened. We did that already. What we want is for you to give us, from your perspective, what you see based on what already is out there, what you see as policy decisions that we should expect. Okay, thanks for calling in and getting us started today. Ed from Queens, you're on the air. Oh, Ed, you're not there. Okay. It is a bit challenging. I understand that. But we still must go through it and experience it. The idea of analyzing. To tell us what is already so obvious, that's not analyzing. To tell us the what you see as the reason for certain things that already are showing up, and how it makes you feel confident in predictions that you are about to make, that we are all going to be witnessing. Clara from Philadelphia, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. And
hello Clara,
everyone else.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I listen to you and I think. You give me
lots of
food for thought, then I respond. Well, anyway, I want to say what I see now is the complete process of sending us into a state of dictatorship, fascism. The word that many people don't want to use. But if every day we're losing our ground, and we're losing what's considered a democratic process. It's taking things away from us. There's no response. They've taken our educational system. They're going to take our benefits. I'm sorry, I got to turn this darn thing down. But anyway, I see us in the forefront of a fascist state, and with no recognition on the general part, from the general population. I don't know that we can turn it back anytime soon because of the lethargy of the public. I've tried to analyze this for myself, why. And most people don't agree with me, but here's what I think. I think that the general public would rather not risk going up against Trump, because the general public, and I'm talking about the white population, sees maybe even subliminally, maybe not consciously, at least we have white privilege. If we go against him, we could lose everything. Our lives depend on it. Even my friends that I don't consider racist, but I think it's embedded in their DNA, I'm sorry. And that's what we're living with. Let it be. I think it's just here. I think fascism is here. They've done things during this impeachment process to kind of get people in the mindset of letting him do anything he wants. That issue of that bit about, oh, he might have made a mistake. He made a mistake. You got to give him that. Give him some leverage. Give him some space. There was no response to that. And when I think of Trump, I think of Caligula. I think of the Roman Empire and its decline. I think of the brutality and the ignorance of that regime, and I compare it with this. It's hard to live with. I'm having difficulty. I hope you're still there, Yatrice.
Yes, I'm listening very intently to what you're saying.
Very difficult.
And I just want to say this, it's not
about myself, it's about me. I have children, I have a son, I have two grandchildren. What they're going to face is horrendous. I might have another 10 years, I'll be 86 pretty soon, and I'm in pretty good shape, but I could be unlucky enough to last another 10 years in this. That's the way I see it.
You're going to be unlucky enough to live another 10 years.
In this. I love life, but not this. Hmm? Go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
But let me ask you. You're pointing out what you're seeing coming down the road. You see fascism in formation. What does that tell you to do?
It tells me to try to get as many people as possible aware of at least looking at this, studying it for themselves, but not to take my word, look at the evidence and see what it means to you. I can't get many people to listen. I avoid the word fascism because I know that people turn off. And I also see that the black people who are going to be probably suffering the most first, because a friend of mine happens to be white, said, Claire, I hate to agree with you. I think if Trump wins, the first people to go will be the black people. I said, maybe the immigrants and then the black people. But 30% of the black population is for Trump, according to statistics I've heard. So I'm basing it on what's going on now and what went on in the world in history. That's another thing. Practically no one looks at history. And history purports the now and the future, particularly in every way, I think. Because even in individuals, past behavior predicts future behavior. Unless the person is committed to change. I mean committed.
Well, thank you, Clara. That was an eye-opening analysis. And I hope people were listening, paying rapt attention to what you're saying, because there is a great deal to what you say here today. And I thank you so much. I also wish that you would live for more than 10 more years.
You're going to put that on me. But thank you, Beatrice.
Okay, take care. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
I want to say that this is shaping up to be a fabulous opportunity for we the people to take back for the real true revolution, which I don't think even ever happened in the first place. I want to quickly point to Trump's investments, okay, the terrible technologies that he is supporting. Example being during the Standing Rock fiasco, it was revealed that he had, at that time, $100 million invested in the Energy Transfer Partnership. So now I'm going to jump to the two most recent executive orders that took place before the State of the Union speech, and I think they're quite revealing. I believe he's got a lot of money invested in the 5G rollout. However, the executive order.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. I don't mean to be rude.
It's okay.
I see where you're going, but it's not in the direction of analysis.
You don't think
it's not in the direction of analysis. You're giving a report on, you know, to get us aware of what Trump is doing. What I would like you to do is to help us understand from your perspective, based on what you have observed, based on what you have called, and reusing as a reference point the impeachment trial coming up to the present time.
Right.
What is it that you see coming from Trump and his administration that should give us pause to get ready for this next phase of the administration and its likely impact on us? That's the analysis that we are after today.
The astute analysis of the previous caller was 100% spot on. And I'm really only trying to elaborate on that a little bit. I see that, yes, he's been given permission to do whatever he wants. And so that's why I'm referring to these two executive orders. They're very revealing. They're quite revealing. The first one I was talking about was he has passed an executive order that there shall be two 5G free zones in the world. One is Palm Beach County, where his compound is. The other is the state of Israel, which might give me some insight into why his cabinet, a lot of his cabinet, has dual Israeli-American citizenship. Why would they have that? Because they may be planning to go to Israel suddenly. The second executive order is the far more alarming one, I think. It's the wake-up call to people who think, oh, they're not coming for me, so I'm all right. The second executive order, Utrice, is that this is a warning to all people of the Jewish faith that they are part of a nation, that they're not simply a religion anymore. In his opinion, they're part of a separate nation. So an American Jew is not an American. American Jew is separate. Now, I don't have to say any more about that. It's a very, very dangerous thing because it's exactly what Hitler did, what Hitler and Himmler did, and made people wear ID patches, big yellow stars. There weren't true Germans. So he's trying to say that Jewish people of the Jewish faith, which is a religion, are not true Americans. You can
extrapolate
what you want from that.
What are they?
They're a separate nation. And so when he beefs up his antagonism against that particular group, he will then intern them for their own protection. Exactly what the Nazi state did. Oh, people are getting angry. They're beating you up. Well, we're going to put you in the internment camps. We're going to relocate you to a safer place for your own good.
But we have indications that the exact opposite is where Trump is. He is very deferential. He has put his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in charge of many initiatives that benefit Israel. And he has taken personal interest and attention in developing an even stronger relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel. So how does that square with what you just said?
It squares this way. He cares nothing for American Jewry. He's beefing the state of Israel up because I think he's going to make his last stand there when things go very badly here. Remember that he promised in his State of the Union speech, you know, there's two conversations, the public and the private, two narratives. He promised the American people that he would not go after Social Security. But I believe the total inverse is true. Once he is reelected, he's told people already. He's told confidants and other more private groups that he's going to do away, he's going to go after Social Security and Medicare.
And certainly Medicaid.
So, it's, you know, his son-in-law is Jewish, so what? Hitler and Himmler didn't touch the Rothschilds. during that whole Holocaust, they remained fine for reasons I don't have to go into now. So his deference to one group and, you know, everyone's still conflating Zionism with Jewry and has nothing to do with Jewishness. Zionism is practiced by a lot of non-Jews. They're the most dangerous practitioners of that, is the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Zionists. And why do they have dual citizenship? So what's intended for the State of Israel has nothing to do with what's intended for the Jews in America. That's my opinion.
Well, thank you. And thanks for reframing your offering today. Thank you for that, so that we are clearer about what it is you're saying. Thank you, Moki, for your call.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ed from Queens. You're on the air. Ed, we having trouble with you today. You're here, and then you're gone, and then we can't find you back. So please, let's try again to get you on air. You see, this is a period in which you pay a particular kind of attention. The full force of whatever it is that Trump intends to do is not yet apparent. Only the hints of where he's going. But there's enough information that should inform us as to where he's likely to go, what he's likely to do, and how we should prepare for it. Ali from New York. Hello, Ali. Long time.
I know. How are you doing?
Okay.
How's your health?
It's hanging. It's okay. Hanging with
good,
me.
Good, good. I'm glad. But I just want to try to answer your question to do an analysis about Trump and his administration. Let me just tell you something. I am very optimistic about what it will happen if he wins again. And this is the whole thing. If you take a look at the case of Roger Stone, right now,
tell us who Roger Stone is.
Well, Roger Stone was charged with, he was charged that he had something to do with, something to do with that Russian business and a few other things. I forgot exactly the situation with Roger Stone. But as you know, he was found guilty, and the judge had to follow the rules of giving him certain amount of years in prison. So right now, Trump is saying that because Roger Stone is one of Trump's friends, and he thinks that he should not get that much time in jail, and I guess no jail at all. So right now, there are some of the prosecutors that I heard this morning, they have resigned because of the mingling of the president and the DOJ actually trying to reduce the sentence and try, I guess, to put this man who is a billionaire free. So, and I always remember that Trump had been laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing all the way to the bank. But, you know, with a lot of things, they have gone well. To me, that's what I'm optimistic. Eventually, the same way that these prosecutors prosecuted this man and he was found guilty, I believe that eventually he's going to do things out there that eventually some people, and some of the Republicans already, they can't swallow any more of what he's doing out there. I know that Clara said that she sees fascism, and I, you know, all of us, we see it too. And she thinks that the whites, they won't, because of the white privilege, they won't react. They have to react. Because if you are here in New York City, you see even white women, older than myself, driving, I've seen two already, driving Ubers. So the day that these men touch all these different programs benefiting the majority of them, they will react. And another thing is take a look when you see Bernie's the kids that are supporting Bernie. Why kids, young people, that they don't want to pay those student loans? Because remember, these banks are making billions and billions and trillions of dollars out of these loans. So all these things together, I think, I know what, I understand what she's saying, because, you know, we've seen this with white privilege all the time. But these people, they are not jobs. Technology is taking over most of the jobs, including white-collar jobs. And you see what happened. I used to work in Wall Street. Wall Street, everything is mechanical. But going back to the Trump administration, I think eventually something's going to happen that people won't be able to swallow it. I'm talking about the GOP. And the same way that Romney, which he's isolated now, testified against him, eventually some of them, if he wins the next 4 years, they're going to walk away from him. I'm very optimistic that he's going to do something that is going to be the end of him. I'm sorry, but I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic. And I just have to say one more.
I'm glad to hear a different point of view. And I'm listening to your rationale for what it is you're saying.
And I just have to say one thing to the lady from your march. What Pelosi did, it's just funny. Because here she is, this woman ripping that piece of paper, but applauding when they presented Juan Guaido, who had never been elected. So 2 and 2 is not one. It can't be. The woman is a millionaire. He's a millionaire. And I'm sorry, I disagree with her. That thing that she just, how come she didn't rip those papers before he started talking? How come she did it when he didn't want to shake her hands? So I disagree. That was just something for the people to see out there. That was just an acting. She just was acting. That was just an act.
What do you think of my analysis that it was very symbolic without her intending it to be? Because going through that whole thing, that act of tearing up a copy of his speech and so forth, was actually an admission that the Democratic Party had nothing else to offer in the way of resistance. They weren't able to mount an effective defense against Trump. They blew everything that they thought would have worked, including and especially the trial. It didn't work, and it failed spectacularly. So at that point that she ripped up those pages, literally she was acknowledging that the Democratic Party had no weapons, no more weapons to fight with. And, it was symbolic the way she did it. I don't think she even realizes to this day that she was actually admitting by that action that the Democratic Party, at least for that particular period in time, was out of ammunition.
I will say this. Take a look at that wall. Take a look at when the Democrats, some of them, they signed to give more money to the military. And you're going to tell me that was symbolic? I just can't see it, because if they really wanted to put him to a trial, really, they would have listened to Al Green from Texas right from the beginning. Right from the beginning, they will have listened to that, what that man has said about this man and other people. This was just a show, and they were embarrassed not to do it because they were cold feet, including Nancy Pelosi. And the reason that she actually ripped those papers, because you know how embarrassed she was when the men looked at, didn't look her way and didn't shake her hand? She, during that speech, she was thinking about what happened to her right before the speech. And she was thinking all along, what can I do? And the only thing that if you could even see her, the way she even ripped the paper, the way that she ripped the paper, it's like she finally figured something out that she could do. So she was doing it for herself. She wasn't doing it for anybody else.
All she had left was symbolism. That was it. Nothing substantial in the way of defying Trump. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you today, Ali. Thank you for calling in. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
All right, it's getting cold over here. Wanted to offer, I can offer proper analysis to this. I believe it was Leona who called earlier, the elder, Leona.
Clara.
And, you know, Clara, I'm sorry, my bad, Clara. And, you know, this is why the wisdom of the elders is always important. She brought very much clear analysis and a lot of what I'm thinking as well. But I wanted to expand on that because she said something very important in regards to Trump is allowed to do whatever he wants to. And I think we're also forgetting about, you know, if he, you know, I don't say if, I say when he wins his second term, what is he going to do?
You have me scared.
Hey, you know what? I'm scared as well, but I mean, the writing's on the wall right now. But I'm also analyzing what is going to happen with this international and foreign policy, because people kind of forget about all of the turmoil that had happened with Iran, you know, with what's going on in Venezuela, what's going on in the Caribbean. And I think he's going to ratchet up some wars going on. I think when his second term is up, there's going to be a major conflict in one of these areas of the world where there's been a lot of turmoil, whether it be Syria, whether it be Iran, whether it be Venezuela or some other South American or even Africa, because I think people are not talking enough about Africa as well. He's going to cause some sort of stir in one of these countries where it's going to be a Libya type of event that happened in the Obama administration, where a country is going to be literally destroyed or changed in a negative way for those people in that area. And with
you said
him having,
and I want to bring you back to it. It kind of just, you just said it about his second term is when his second term is up. So you are foreseeing his reelection.
Yes, I am. I like I said, I pray that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong, but I just see another term coming his way.
And give us some insight from your perspective as to why you feel fairly certain that he'll have a second term.
Well, for one, his opposition, the Democratic Party, just does not have a, I mean, from my perspective,
the Republican Party.
No, No, the opposition, the Democratic Party.
Okay, yes.
His opposition, yes. I just don't see a strong, well, first of all, I don't even see a strong fight with them to gather, you know, enough or rally their political base to even come out and vote. I mean, I know everybody loves Bernie, but for some reason or another, and this is going through past history, they are going to cheat him out of the Democratic nomination again. And anybody else outside of Joe Biden, and you see his numbers, Joe Biden is far behind in the polls and in the election booth. He's taking a beating in the polls. But
I'm glad you raised that name, Joe Biden, because this whole thing I've been contending from the beginning, this whole strategy by the Democratic Party was to protect Biden. How does it look now?
It looks terrible. It looks horrible now because Biden is taking a beating at the polls right now. And I feel like whoever comes up as the most popular candidate amongst the voters, they will not get the opportunity. They will not get the fair opportunity to run a clean election against Donald Trump. And because of this disarray, because of this disagreement with the people who actually run the Democratic Party, that will cause them to lose. I think the Democratic Party will just implode on themselves. And Trump will win again.
I used to like you, Henry. I used to like you, but you're not bringing good news today. Actually, you're bringing better than good news. You're bringing real news and opening our eyes to what stands before us. So, in as much as you see that happening, that Trump will have a second term, what do you see in terms of reaction by, well, we just heard, I just played a piece from Bernie Sanders' victory speech, and people are kind of optimistic about that. Why are you not so optimistic?
Because I'm like I said, I am reaching in past history. I'm reaching 4 years ago. Bernie Sanders was the golden boy, or you know, the guy who was supposed to, you know, be the next Democratic president in the 2016 election. And the Democratic Party had ruined that. Everybody, you know, like people who voted in the primaries, everybody knew Bernie Sanders was the guy. But they was pushing Hillary to be that candidate. I don't think the Democratic Party, well, I don't think the people who run the Democratic Party have learned their lesson. I don't think that they learned their lesson, and they're going to try to sabotage his campaign or Pete Buttigieg, who's actually rising in the polls as well, either one of them, I think is going to get the most votes, but I think there's going to be a push by the Democratic Party to basically derail them from that nomination.
Wow. So we have a lot of thinking to do because you are right on spot with your analysis today. Most everybody, in fact, everybody was on spot today with their analyses. And this is why I encourage people to take things a little higher, a notch higher, not only from reacting, but thinking methodically based on what you're observing, based on the facts that are emerging. What is it that we have to be prepared to do? Because there's going to be a big fight. There ought to be a big fight. Thanks, everyone, for contributing today. I really appreciate it. so good to hear from you, and so good to be privileged to enjoy your thoughts. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.